Chapter 16, Evangeline. They disappeared. The Thunder God, the Maiden, the Shadowy Dancers, all vanished. Their voices were replaced by a noise of hammering. Her brain seemed to reconnect with reality and the panicky remembrance of where she was. She was inside the barrel, and someone was banging on it from the outside. Had she completed the journey? Was she already over the falls? Should she pull out the bung now and get fresh air? She needed air more than anything else. Was she still holding the string? Yes, it was in her hand. Did she have the strength to pull? She summoned her resolve, but even as she started to tug on the string, she felt the barrel move again. She was flying through cold, airless darkness. Her body had lost its substance, and she was weightless. Her heart was in her throat. Her stomach was somewhere alongside her ears. Her arms were no longer her own, and the terrified voice was screaming again. But where was that other voice? The one that had called her name? As suddenly as it started, her flight came to an end. Now she felt terrible blows from outside her prison, pounding and smashing. Something struck her on the head. She closed her eyes and gave up. The voice was not going to call her again. Now she was going to die. Danny. Slow down, Danny shouted. We're going to run out of fuel.
Gotta give the people a show, Bill Hillgroves yelled back as he threw the motorboat into another tight turn that sent it speeding along the shoreline, throwing up sheets of water to mark their progress.
Danny, seated in the bow, was soaked through and angry. Why Bill? He asked himself. Why would he send Bill? He could have sent anyone, not just Bill. What if she comes over while we're playing around like this? Danny shouted.
We're not playing, Hillgrove replied. We're giving the people value for their money. They have to have something to look at while your uncle messes around up there.
He eased back on the throttle slightly. She won't be over for hours. And when she does come, she won't have the barrel with her.
Don't say that, Danny pleaded. My uncle will fix it.
Oh, sure, Joshua, the miracle worker, Bill said. He's out there now, hanging on a wire, trying to kick her free. But no one's looking at him. They're all down here looking at us, and I intend to give them something to look at. Danny looked up at the cliff top and saw the sea of faces staring down at them. Bill hurled the boat into another tight turn and waved at the crowd. I should never have given him the tiller, Danny thought. I should have refused to move. He's not even looking at the falls.
He realized with a sinking heart that Bill Hillgrove had no expectation that Joshua would be able to rescue Evangeline.
Eventually the barrel would break apart and fall into bits and pieces, and somewhere among those remnants would be whatever was left of Evangeline Murray, the new Maid of the Mist. Danny looked up at the planes circling over them in the clear blue sky. That would be the place to be. Up there where he could see everything, not down here with nothing to see but the endlessly falling water. The crowd erupted into a sudden cheer.
Bill, Danny shouted, she's coming!
Bill throttled the engine all the way back and they both turned and stared. The barrel hurled over the rim, a black missile flying above the white spray. The seagulls swooped down to it, calling each other, and then turned away. Well, nothing there for them. In a matter of seconds, the barrel crashed down into the foaming basin at the foot of the cataract, and there it remained, rolling over and over, but imprisoned by the pounding water.
Get in there, Danny yelled.
Bill shook his head. No, I'm not going in any closer. Just wait, she'll break free.
She'll be dead, said Danny. Take us in, Mr. Hillgrove, please.
No, Hillgrove repeated. She's probably dead already, and I'm not throwing my own life away.
It's what you were hired to do, Danny shouted.
I was hired to launch her, Hillgrove said stubbornly.
And you screwed that up, Danny responded. Are you going to screw this up too?
Oh, the impatience of youth, said Hillgrove philosophically,
holding his position well clear of the churning cataract.
You'll learn, boy. You'll learn.
Not from the likes of you, Danny exploded. Either you take this boat in, or...
Or what? Taunted Hillgrove.
Or I'll do it for you, Danny said, lunging out of his seat in the bow. I'll take it by force, and they'll all see me do it.
Try explaining that to the reporters.
Hillgrove looked up at the cliff face and crowds looking down at them. He also saw the crowd of people picking their way down the stairs in the cliff, all headed for the beach. Grudgingly, he said, I'll take her in a bit closer. You see if you can reach her with the hook. Danny scrambled back onto the bow, grasping the boat hook. Slowly,
Timidly, Bill edged the boat in towards the foam water at the base of the falls. Danny could see the barrel clearly, rolling over and over in the foam, but still trapped in one place.
"Come on," he shouted. "Take her in closer. We can get her. I know we can."
Hillsgrove ventured a few feet closer.
"Grab her with a hook," he shouted, "and let's get out of here."
Danny leaned forward, extending the boat hook.
"Damn," he shouted. "God damn!"
"What's the matter?"
"No ropes."
"What?"
"Nothing to hook onto."
"I put them on myself," Hillsgrove insisted. Danny turned towards him.
"Are you sure?" he asked.
"Yeah, I'm sure," Hillsgrove answered.
Danny looked back at the red-faced man who concentrated on steering the boat and refused to meet his eye. Hillsgrove had forgotten to do it. He was supposed to have tied ropes around the barrel, a network of lines that could easily be hooked.
Hillsgrove threw the engine into reverse.
"We'll have to wait till she breaks free," he said. "Nothing else to do. You can't hook her."
Danny heard a concerted sigh of disappointment and frustration from the watching crowds as Bill reversed the engine.
"We can't leave her," he said. "She'll be out of air."
"She's already dead," Hillsgrove insisted.
"Take us in again," Daddy insisted. "I'll go over the side with a rope."
"In there," said Hillsgrove, looking at the churning icy water. "Are you crazy?"
"No crazier than my uncle," said Danny. "He'd do it if he was here."
"Then you're both crazy," said Hillsgrove. "But it's your neck. Just don't expect me to come in after you."
"Of course not," Danny replied. "Look, here's what we'll do. I'll tie myself off to the boat, and I'll swim out and get a loop around the barrel if I can. Then you just put her in reverse and drag us out of there. We'll have to be quick. I won't be able to last long in that water, so I have to get it right the first time. All you have to do is drag us out of the waterfall. Can you do that?"
"You're crazy," Hillsgrove said.
"Crazy or not," Danny insisted, "can you do it?"
Yeah. You get the rope around her and I'll pull you out. One chance, that's all you've got. Then I'll drag you out whether you have her or not. I'm not going to let that crowd up there watch you drown while I do nothing."
"Don't worry," said Danny. "You can be a hero if that's what you want." Danny tied a bulky cork life preserver around his waist, and above the preserver he tied a lifeline, attaching himself to the boat. Then he tied another length of line to the stern cleat. He balanced himself in the stern of the boat, holding the rescue line, ready to go. One last time he looked up at the blue dome of the sky and the circling planes. One day he'd be up there. One day he'd be free of this damned river.
"Take her in," he said, and Hillsgrove reluctantly obliged. Aware of the crowd and believing that many of them might be young and female, Danny attempted a graceful dive from the stern. But the life preserver spoiled his style, and he landed in an ungainly sprawl. For a moment, his lungs refused to draw in air.
The water was like an icy band across his chest. Instantly, his head began to throb, and his hands and feet numbed.
Striking out as hard as he could, he flailed across to the barrel, drawing in breath in brief, painful gasps.
Round with the rope,
the barrel actually assisting him by continuing to roll. His dead blue fingers managed to complete one loop even as the barrel threatened to roll over him and push him under. He knew he had no time to try anything else. The world was fading, and his legs felt like lead. He pulled the end of the rope up and wrapped it through his life preserver. It was as much as he could do. With a supreme effort, he managed to raise his arm.
"Pull," he shouted.
Hillsgrove was looking the other way, looking at the shore.
"Pull,"
Danny choked out again. And Hillsgrove turned, saw him, and gunned the throttle. With the barrel riding behind him, Danny rode the boat's wake as Hillsgrove roared in towards the shore. Joshua. Out on the river, Joshua was alone, fighting to save his own life. The barrel was gone, and with it the crowd of spectators who were even now rushing down the hill to see what was happening down below. There were men, of course, on the powerhouse roof, waiting to pull him back into shore. But they couldn't pull him until he was back in the harness of the breeches buoy. He was dizzy with pain.
His right leg hung uselessly,
and he felt as though his arms were being ripped from their sockets. If he dropped any lower, the throbbing leg would be in the water. He was tempted, very tempted, to let the cold water spill over his foot and gradually pull him away. For the first time in his life, he really understood the lure of the water. With a last, desperate effort, he hauled himself up until his arms were once again over the ring of the breeches buoy. He couldn't even think of raising his legs to get them into the harness. He pulled himself up as far as he could so that at least the upper half of his body was draped across the buoy. The position was precarious, but he thought there was a chance that he could stay in that position long enough to reach shore. He pulled on the carrying rope and felt the harness begin to move. He closed his eyes, trying not to lapse into unconsciousness. Slowly and painfully, his friends and neighbors pulled on the carrying rope, carrying him back up the cable, away from the river and the rocks and the rusted barge. Danny flopped ashore like an exhausted fish. He had tried for a graceful landing, but his frozen legs collapsed under him. No one seemed to notice his condition. They were far too busy rolling the barrel onto the beach and standing it upright. Bill Hillsgrove had run the bow of the boat onto the beach, and now he leaped out to take charge. "Open it up," he ordered. Danny pushed himself up onto his hands and knees and watched the men unfasten the screws one by one. Arms reached down inside the barrel. They pulled her out. She was limp, eyes closed. "Is she alive?" Danny asked between chattering teeth. "Is she all right?" The men laid her down on the beach. "Stand back," Bill ordered, suddenly in charge. "Give her air, give her air." Her skin was white, tinged with blue, but her eyelids flickered. Her lips opened. Her breast rose and fell and rose again. She was breathing. "Thank God," Danny said. He staggered to his feet. Bill Hillsgrove remained kneeling beside Evangeline. Her eyes opened. She focused on Hillsgrove's face. "Joshua?" she asked softly. "No," said Hillsgrove. "It's not Joshua. It's Bill. You're all right now, my dear. I've taken care of everything." Danny tried feebly to push Hillsgrove aside, but the older man was firmly entrenched. "It's a good thing I was here," Bill said, looking at the crowd and smiling. Danny's world began to darken. He fell back onto the beach. With the world spinning around him, he managed to look up at the falls. "Where the hell's my uncle?" he managed to whisper. "Does anyone care?" He was seized with a violent shivering fit, and then the darkness descended completely. Joshua. At last, Joshua was within reach of outstretched hands. As soon as he released his grasp on the harness, he collapsed onto the sun-warmed roof of the powerhouse. "Are you all right?" a voice asked from miles away. "Evangeline?" he asked. "She's alive," said another voice, sounding even further away, as if it was echoing through a tunnel. "Thank God," Joshua said. He was dimly aware of being picked up, and he knew that he cursed loudly when someone touched his leg. He closed his eyes until he had been settled into the back of a pickup truck. His leg felt as though it was on fire. His hands burned with pain. Someone was pouring brandy down his throat and urging him to hang on. "Just hang on." Evangeline felt absolutely fine, and that was what she said to the doctor who examined her at the hospital. She didn't even know why Cornelia would insist that she go there. "There's nothing wrong with me," she protested. "We have to build up the excitement," Cornelia said. "Now don't say a word until the doctor's seen you. Let them think you're injured. It's all good publicity. They're all chomping at the bit for an interview, but we're not going to give them one. Not yet. Trust me, Evangeline, I know what I'm doing." Evangeline allowed herself to be carried through the hospital doors on a stretcher and deposited in a small curtained enclosure. The doctor was a middle-aged Englishman, and in her opinion, extremely rude. He seemed totally unimpressed by her valiant ride over the falls. From the way that he bellowed at the intruding reporters and the curt orders that he issued to the nurses, she suspected he was ex-military, a fact he soon confirmed. "There's nothing wrong with you," he said, having taken her temperature and her pulse and examined her for bruises. He shone a light in her eyes, moving it from side to side. "No concussion," he announced. "If you passed out, well, it was more from fear than anything else." "I was not afraid," Evangeline insisted. "Well, you should have been," the doctor snapped back. "I've seen enough people die, Mrs. Murray, and die horribly, but that was war, and the cause was just. But even then, it was never their own choice. Well, you've done it now, and you didn't die. So I suppose the press will make you a heroine. I suggest you get out of those wet clothes. No doubt you have a fur coat somewhere. Put it on, drink some hot tea, and you'll be perfectly fine. The nurse will take care of you. I can only spare one. They're not ladies' maids, you know. But they seem to admire you. They can't wait to hear all about it. As for me, I have two real emergencies to tend to, so I'll bid you good day. He turned on his heel and stomped out of the examination room with an uncompromising straight back, but a distinct limp. Wounded, Evangeline thought. Maybe that's why he's so bitter. Cornelia breezed in through the curtains. Dry clothes, she said. Comb your hair and put on some lipstick, and then we'll go out and meet the press. Where do we go from here? Evangeline asked. Straight to the train station, Cornelia said. We're late already because of the way the barrel was hung up. That man McLaren is a prize fool. Where's everyone else? Evangeline asked. Iris has gone ahead by car to Buffalo to make the arrangements and to be sure the people will wait for us. Apparently Nell has decided not to come with us. Why not? Evangeline asked. She was so determined. Something about looking after Danny, Cornelia said dismissively. Now hurry up and get dressed. When you come out, I want you to be photographed with Mr. Hillsgrove.
Odious man, I know, but he's the one who opened the barrel.
It will make a good story.
What about Danny? Wasn't he there?
No, said Cornelia firmly. It was Mr. Hillsgrove.
But where was Danny? Evangeline asked.
Well, how would I know? Cornelia responded. They're all the same in that family. Can't trust any of them. Not even Nell. Well, all I can say is that we'll manage just fine without them. Cornelia swished out through the curtains, and the nurse helped Evangeline to dress and comb her hair.
There's a real crowd outside, the nurse said. You're going to be famous.
I certainly hope so, said Evangeline. That's the reason I did it.
Was it awful? The nurse asked.
Evangeline hesitated.
Not all of it, she said eventually.
Some of it was quite peaceful, but the landing, that was pretty awful. The nurse took her arm to lead her outside.
I'd better walk on my own, Evangeline said. I don't want to give the wrong impression.
The corridor was deserted, except for Cornelia, waiting for her by the exit door, a man slumped on a chair, and a nurse, hurrying towards her with an armful of what looked like hot water bottles.
Evangeline could hear the doctor berating the nurses in one of the curtain cubicles, and the nurse with the hot water bottles hurried past her and into the cubicle where she was greeted with a bellow of, "About time, too," from the irate doctor. "Now go and get more blankets." The nurse hurried out again, glanced at Evangeline, and whispered, "Well done," under her breath, and then she said, "Hypothermia, the poor boy. I have to hurry," and clattered off down the corridor in her sensible black shoes. Evangeline felt a twinge of guilt. Had someone fallen in the water? Was it one of the spectators trying to get a glimpse of the barrel? Maybe that's why the doctor was so annoyed. Perhaps he held her responsible for whoever it was in the cubicle. Well, she thought, I certainly didn't ask anyone to fall in. They should have been more careful.
Come along, Evangeline, Cornelia called from the doorway. They're all waiting for you.
Evangeline hurried forward, past the man in the chair. She glanced at him without much interest, and then realized it was Joshua, and he looked like hell.
Joshua, she said. She took a step towards him and became aware of a strong smell of brandy.
He looked up at her from strangely unfocused eyes. He didn't rise to his feet, but he did extend a limp hand.
Evangeline, he said. My dear Evangeline, are you all right?
Evangeline's heart, which had lifted with hope for just a moment, sank again. So this was it. This was the answer to her letter. Brandy. She ignored his outstretched hand and the entreaty in his eyes.
Yes, she said, I'm perfectly all right, Mr. McLaren. In fact, I've never been better in my life.
I did it, Mr. McLaren. I did it. No thanks to you, but I did it anyway.
You most certainly did, said Joshua.
And to think what almost happened. Can you ever forgive me?
For what? Asked Evangeline. For not being in the boat.
Bill managed just fine without you. I'm sure that you and Danny had other important things to tend to.
Poor Danny, Joshua mumbled.
Will he be all right? Nell will never forgive me if he's not.
I'm sure he'll be fine, Evangeline said. I don't know what it is you think has happened to him, but I'm sure he'll be fine.
It's just the brandy talking, Mr. McLaren.
It was the red flags, Joshua mumbled.
He seemed to be having trouble framing his words. Evangeline assumed that there had been a great deal of brandy involved in whatever excuse he had for his absence from the river.
I never thought, he said. I should have realized.
Don't worry about it, said Evangeline. I'm grateful to you, Mr. McLaren, for all of your assistance.
After all, if it hadn't been for your insistence on all that padding, I'm sure I would have been very badly bruised.
As it is, I hardly have a mark on me. Yes, of course, Joshua said. He struggled to rise to his feet, but his legs slipped out from under him and landed him on the floor. Evangeline felt Cornelia tugging at her sleeve. You must have another couple of drinks, Evangeline said, cold anger gripping her, to celebrate my victory. I'm going to be famous, Mr. McLaren, just as I said I would. Cornelia tugged harder. Come along, she said. Don't waste any more time talking to him. Joshua struggled to rise from the floor. He was white-faced with beads of sweat standing on his forehead. He crawled painfully to his feet and stood holding onto the back of a chair. Goodbye, Evangeline, he said. I'll never forget you. She hesitated and then just for a moment took hold of his hand. Memory flooded back. The sunset, the island, the late flying birds, and this man telling her that he could love her forever. Forever had turned out to be a very short time. I'll never forget you either, she said. Oh, Joshua, why couldn't you have been? What? He asked. What did you want me to be? I don't know, she said. I wanted you to be something you won't be, you can't be. Goodbye, Joshua. Goodbye, Mrs. Murray. Enjoy your fame and fortune. She tossed her head. Oh, I will. I'll enjoy every minute of it. She hesitated in the doorway. There was blood on her hands. How did that happen? They said she didn't have a scratch on her. Could I borrow your handkerchief? She said to Cornelia. She wiped her hands as they walked towards the exit. The blood came off easily. There was no problem.